Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:18 British Summertime. Today is May 15th. And of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But first, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And we appear now to be at a point where this remarkable 9 consecutive week uptrend has ended, because this week appears to be the first down week that we've had. So that is a loss of consistency. And the likelihood is that we are now entering a phase that will be a pullback and consolidation of these gains. We remain in a bipolar world where there is a marked difference between the stock market performance, or economic performance for that matter, of the USA and the vast majority of Europe relative to Asia. And those two areas are characterized by two distinct views of how the stock market have performed. What we have seen over the last 6 or 7 months has been that back in September and October, the S&P was more overextended relative to its moving average than it has been since 1932. And we predicted way back then that we would see reversion to the mean, and this has now occurred. So this impressive rally that has been 9 consecutive weeks to the upside has succeeded in pulling the S&P right back up to its 200-day moving average. Now, this is also a period where you would be expecting that people who are absolute bears would be saying, well, this is just like any other bear market rally that we've seen, just like when you look back at between 1929 and 1932, that there were a number of similar rallies that got back up to the moving average and then the market just deteriorated away from there. So what we need to see is that markets consolidate in an orderly fashion below their moving average and eventually sustain a move above them, and that moving average turn upwards as an area of support in any recovery type of scenario. There is a marked difference now between the type of action that we saw way back in the early 30s, or indeed in any depression type scenario, and what we're seeing now, in that we are seeing a huge reflationary effort, not just in the USA, but right across the world, which has been vilified in some sense because of the moral hazard that's been involved and the devaluation of currencies and the vast amount of debt that governments are taking on. But on the other hand, it does appear to be working. And we are seeing that markets are finding support, that leading markets, which have been less affected by the credit crisis, are performing considerably better. And a phrase that we've used over, well over the last year, has been the enterprising East versus the what is now, I think, could be termed the moribund West, because they don't have that massive consumer debt. There is no need for deleveraging in the consumer economies that are out there. The challenge that Asia particularly faces is that they need to grow their consumer economy and become less reliant on the export market. That's probably not going to happen in the short term, but it is certainly something that we need to see them starting to move towards in the medium to longer term. So that is something that we can watch out for, and it would be an enormously positive move in the Asian region. In the meantime, Asia is leveraged to global growth, and if growth is picking up on a global basis and being led by the Asian region, then that is an area that we need to keep an eye on, and it is likely to be a leading indicator for what is happening in other stock markets. That being the case, with so many of these Asian markets having broken upwards from their bases and breaking through their moving averages, they're now looking rather overextended. So while the vast majority of them still remain reasonably consistent, the potential for a pullback and consolidation of these remarkable gains remains possible. The bullish hypothesis would argue that there is such a vast amount of cash still sitting on the sidelines that the Asian region is still underowned, and that any pullbacks that we have will be quickly picked up as buying opportunities by people that are chasing these rallies. So we see that in markets, for example, Taiwan, which gapped upwards on that news 2 weeks ago that the capital links with China were being put in place, has held on to its gains remarkably well, whereas, for example, Indonesia has pulled back, well, has had one downward dynamic to suggest that it has encountered a little bit of resistance. But in the main, this is turning, if this is the consolidation that we're looking for, it is very orderly, and for the while we could expect it to pick up pace as it enters its latter phase, at the moment it is looking very orderly, and that is a bullish factor. So the argument to say that Asia is leading and that it is pushing into a new bull market is well made, and that would also suggest that other markets around the world, which have perhaps been lagging, are much less likely to go down and make new lows in a consolidation of these gains. Although, from an economic standpoint, the prognosis for the USA, much of Europe, and the UK would suggest that growth is going to be really rather slow in both absolute terms and relative terms when compared to what emerging markets can do. And when we look at the long term, when bubbles burst, you don't expect that bursting bubble to be the leading area in any new bull market. So when the Nasdaq bubble burst, technology bounced, and it took a couple of, well, it took a year to almost double and then moved into a ranging phase. Well, technology wasn't leading. It was the financial shares that led in the last bull run. And it is financial shares which led it on the downside. Now, they probably do need to stop going down before any new bull market can get going. But they're unlikely to lead. And for the moment, and this is probably going to last for a considerable period of time, the leaders in this move are Asian emerging markets, or perhaps just the Asian region generally, and the commodity producers in Latin America, all tied to the massive stimulus package that the Chinese have put in place, which is helping to support economies in the region and helping to support commodity producers in Latin America, and the very fact that these economies are less leveraged to the US consumer, more leveraged to global growth in general, and that trade between these countries has increased considerably over the last decade. They're less reliant on the emerging or in the on the developed markets in the West, and they have considerable room to push upwards over the next decade. And if there is a candidate for bubbles to develop, then you would have to look towards the Asian or Latin American regions, where there is considerable room for the consumer to become more leveraged or to invest more heavily in their domestic markets. And that is likely to attract more people into those regions, particularly in view of the fact that we're starting to see that the currencies in these regions are beginning to strengthen once more against the dollar. We look at the Asian dollar index or the Latin American dollar index, both of them are showing considerable relative strength over the last couple of months. And considering the extent to which they have already fallen, then there is significant potential for them to recover over the coming years. They're probably more likely to be volatile than they have been between the sort of period between 2002 and 2008, but there is the distinct potential that they will find support at increasingly higher levels, and that we will continue to see that the Asian region and the Latin American commodity producers are showing relative strength relative to the rest of the world. And if they are showing relative strength, then what has been presumed to be safe havens, such as the dollar and the yen and treasuries, look to be in trouble. Gold, which I will talk about in a minute, is a slightly different case. The US dollar has a negative interest rate differential with the vast majority of the emerging world, and it is looking expensive up at these levels when compared to the fundamentals that are behind the economy, and the yen is in a very similar position. And these markets were pushed up to extraordinary levels For the simple reason that they were benefiting from people raising cash from the liquidation of carry trades or the liquidation of long positions in higher yielding assets. And for the similar reason, US Treasuries soared to historically high levels as well. If there's one existing bubble in the world out there, it's probably in US Treasuries or in government bonds generally. And gosh, these governments are going to have to print a lot of bonds over the coming years to fund the reflation that they are attempting. I saw figures this week that are estimating that it is in the region of $10 trillion in government new government debt that is going to be issued. And at such low yields, then even if you use the rather weak argument that we're in deflationary type environment, that the real yields are actually higher, they're still really quite low for the type of risk you're taking on when there is absolutely no shortage of government debt out there at the moment. So there is enormous potential for the higher yielding assets that are available in other parts of the world to perform relative to the treasury market or for or against the dollar or the yen over a long period of time. However, when we look at how the dollar has performed, we look at the remarkable run-up that it has had since the lows that we saw last year, and we look at how it has performed at other lows in historic terms, and it ranges more often than it trends. And that means that there is significant room for the dollar to be much more volatile than it has been over the last year and to range in a volatile fashion, creating a low in the market. And that would suggest that we will have more volatile trading in some of the other markets that are dependent on the US dollar. So the currency differentials that we have out there and how currencies are trading, I think, will have a much greater impact on how stock markets move and how commodity markets move over the coming years. I said that gold was a slightly different kettle of fish for the simple reason that it benefited enormously from the safe haven that was sought by so many investors as other markets started to fall aggressively. But what we've seen recently is that it has shown remarkable relative strength compared to the other safe havens, and now is starting to move upwards once more with stock markets and other commodities. That would suggest that the people who bought gold as a safe haven sold it to invest in stock markets, and that the people now buying gold are more traditional buyers of gold who have great worries about the state of the fiat currency world and are looking for a hard asset. And when we also look at how gold has performed over the last 7 or 8 years, it has moved through these periods of consolidation, which have been just over a year to 18 months. And we have just gone through a consolidation in gold, which has been just over a year. And gold is pushing back up towards the upper side of this long range. And there is the distinct possibility that we're going to see gold pushing to the upside significantly in some time this year, probably in the latter half of the year when it is cyclically stronger. And that is likely to coincide with some additional weakness for the US dollar, and it could easily be a distinct benefit to the commodity markets. Commodities, of course, have had just as big a fall, if not a bigger fall, than a number of the emerging stock markets. They are also leveraged to growth in China and global growth. And with the infrastructure packages that have been unveiled right around the world, well, you can't build infrastructure without the industrial commodities necessary to put into them. And large numbers of these industrial commodities are basing and are pressuring the upper sides of their bases. which would really suggest that the risks are to the upside. We can't expect them to regain their heights in the very short term or in a number of months. It may take years. But it does look like we are going to start seeing commodities showing relative strength compared to particularly developed stock markets and relative to government bonds, and that they are an asset class which will start to attract greater attention over the medium term. The oil market is also of distinct interest because it is gradually ranging higher in this base building phase that it is in. It has tested the $60 level and pulled back from there somewhat over this week, but still remains very consistent and very steady. And again, the risks are to the upside. The global economy has had a big bonus in the fact that we've had commodity prices falling so very sharply, and that has been like a tax cut for the vast majority of economies out there. They do need to take advantage of that while it lasts, because while oil is unlikely to get back to that high near $150 in this year or next, there is the distinct possibility that it is going to get back up there in the next decade. And we need to use the opportunity that we have at hand to build the infrastructure necessary to avoid an energy crisis such as we had last year, where economies really came under extreme pressure with very high oil prices. And that is not entirely necessary if we put the correct infrastructure in place while we still have time. When we look further out, the potential for commodities to continue to outperform in this type of environment or into the new cycle that we are entering, it does now appear that the bear market that's lasted for the last year or so is ending, or it's more than a year at this point, and that we're if it is ending, then we're in the beginning of a new bull market. And the first psychological stage of a new bull market is characterized by disbelief, and there is still a huge amount of argument about whether we are going to see a prolonged bear market, whether markets are going to go down and make new lows, or whether this is indeed base formation development. And again, we come back to this two-pronged argument that in the lagging markets, this is probably base formation development, and in leading markets, they have broken upwards from their base. Probably worst case scenario is that they move into a first step above the base, consolidating and building support where demand reasserts itself over the medium term and pushes up into new consistent uptrends. From the point of view of where one should be invested, because we have the distinct possibility that Asian and Latin American currencies are going to strengthen on a relative basis, not just versus the US dollar, but against the pound or the euro or the yen, then there is a distinct advantage to being invested in those particular regions as a foreigner. As a local in those areas, then investing in one's home stock market is probably going to be a relative benefit. If there's going to be another housing bubble or property bubble, then the chances are that it's going to develop in Asia or Latin America rather than the rest of the world, which has just had one that burst. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, but I would like to wish all the best to all of you.